Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Lainey Zuver. Our final trapdoor storyteller is a familiar voice on the WBOI airwaves. You've heard programming director Katie Anderson before. It's really just a matter of when. Katie's friend and trapdoor organizer, Becca Bell, will introduce her in a moment. Thank you for listening.
I actually was lucky enough to sort of hear this story or parts of it the first time. She and I have a strange hobby of traveling to exotic locations and then running 13 miles for fun. And then we usually, we did a race in Acadia National Park in Maine. And it was beautiful, but it was 13 miles of running, which is what it is. And then we always have this habit after a race of like laying in our beds, our separate beds in the hotel room for like 3 hours afterwards, just like, hello, I can talk to you, but I can't move my body. Because you can't. So that's what we do. And the thing is you lay there for 2 hours and we tell each other about our lives. So I actually heard this story for the first time in that very vulnerable state. We were both in a very vulnerable state. And it was a bonding experience for us. And you guys are going to get that same bonding experience. She's full of surprises. She even had a surprise wedding a week and a half ago. Like, we showed up to a party, all of us, but then it was a wedding. So congratulations to the newlyweds. There are many surprises. Prepare to be a little bit surprised by what you hear, but I hope that you're able to connect. So please welcome to the stage, Katie Anderson.
It's so weird to be talking into a microphone and have people in front of me. So if you were to ask me when it all started, I would say it was the summer of 1996. My sister Erica was 11, and I was 7, and we were watching the Magnificent Seven U.S. Women's Gymnastics team on TV. And if anyone remembers that year, the gymnasts were amazing and doing things that I didn't even think were possible for a human body. And that was also the year that Carrie Strug landed on one leg and just blew everyone away. And at the time, my sister Erica was really, really into gymnastics, and she was incredible at it, even at 11 years old. But you would think that watching these elite athletes on TV would make a little kid feel excited or inspired. But with Erica, that wasn't the case. Instead, she just sat there looking sad, and she didn't want to help me work on my back handsprings like we had been doing every night. But she just sat there looking at the TV, and she said, I'll never be that good. And it was that summer that she started battling anorexia as well as other mental and emotional health issues. And that was also the summer that I absolutely started to hate summer vacation, because my parents would be at work during the day, and so they would put Erica in charge. And typically how the day went was we would get up after my parents left for the day, and she would make me weigh myself, and then she would weigh herself. And she decided that her goal that summer was to weigh less than me, even though we were separated by about 4 years, and that we were at totally different stages of adolescence. And the scale basically dictated how the day would go. So if I weighed less than her, she would be totally terrible to me. And every day, constantly, she'd call me fat and ugly and stupid. She'd scream at me. She'd lock us out of the house. And it was just a really hard thing for a 7-year-old to have to go through. And she had gotten so strong-willed and angry that no discipline really worked for her. So anytime I'd tell my parents, it usually just ended up backfiring. And when I started school later that year, a teacher took me aside because she noticed I wasn't eating my lunch. I was really quiet, and I was just nervous around all the other kids. And It was amazing to me that an adult took an interest in me and seemed concerned about me. And I had this secret fantasy in my head that, you know, she would find out what was going on at home, how miserable I was, and she'd tell my parents and they would send Erica away, or maybe send me away at that point, and everything would just feel normal. But when I told her about what was going on at home, she smiled and looked at me, and she said, well, you know, sometimes siblings are just like that, and someday she'll outgrow it, you'll outgrow it, and you'll be best friends. And that really stuck with me, because I felt like maybe I was the problem. Maybe I was being too sensitive. And I kind of just started living in her shadow completely after that point. For one reason, it was because anytime I received any praise or anytime I did well at something, it would usually result in her doing something hurtful to herself or others, but also because she was remarkably talented at absolutely everything that she did, whether it was gymnastics or music or acting or school or just about anything else. And it was easy for people on the outside to overlook some of her emotional and mental issues. And as time went on, I just tried to be invisible. I so desperately wanted her to be normal, to be nice to me and my brother and my parents. And I would do what I could to control the environment and to do what I could to just keep her in a good mood, because she would just swing wildly from absolutely loving people and doing anything she could and being fiercely protective of me. But then the next minute, she would absolutely hate me. So I just never really knew where I stood with her. And of course, you know, my parents tried to get her treatment and did all they could, but people who tend to have mental and emotional issues sometimes have the ability to turn it on and turn it off again. And she was smart enough to know what to do and what to say in order to get back to her old habits. And once I entered college, I tried to get out of the house as often as I possibly could. And as a result of that, I started meeting new people and I found new hobbies and interests. And I actually felt like I started having room to grow. And I was excited about these new experiences I had. I got to travel around the country working for political campaigns. And I made new friends and I had great new relationships with people. And I was feeling really great. But anytime something good happened to me and Erica caught wind of it, she would do something self-destructive or she would lash out at us. So I just kept quiet. And as I was doing well and as I was growing as a person, she was getting worse and worse. She was still battling anorexia and she was still having mental and emotional problems. And by 2013, I had basically just cut her out of my life because it was so mentally and emotionally exhausting having to see her go in and out of the hospital, oftentimes getting arrested, or oftentimes flailing and screaming at people and causing fights, and I just couldn't be a part of it anymore. And it was in 2013, in November, I got a call from my mom, and she asked me to go to St. Joseph Hospital. And we met her there, and by that point, I was used to getting phone calls about Erica being in the hospital or Erica being in jail, but this call felt very, very different. And so I get there, and I hadn't seen Erica in months, but I found out that when they admitted her to the hospital, she was having renal failure, and she was down to 61 pounds. And I knew that this was getting close to the end, and there was really nothing we could do to save her. And initially, my parents didn't want me to see her because she was so gaunt and horrible looking. But ultimately, my dad really pushed her because I think he wanted us to make amends for the years of torment that she had bestowed upon me. And at that point, I wasn't really sure if I was ready to forgive her for all of that. And at that point, I felt like what she had done to herself was done to her by herself. And I waited about a month and a half before I finally visited her. And I don't know what possessed me to do so, but on New Year's Day in 2014, I walked from our West Central apartment and I walked to St. Joseph Hospital and I saw her for the first time. And when I walked into her room, I didn't recognize her. And she couldn't speak at the time, but I just held her hand and we connected. And I only stayed for a few minutes because seeing someone look like that is jarring. But as I left the hospital, I told myself, you know, maybe if I keep visiting her, maybe the positivity, maybe the love will fix her. And so over the next couple of weeks, I would go and visit her. I would paint her nails. We'd watch every stupid Jennifer Love Hewitt movie I could think of. We'd gossip, try to be like normal sisters. And the days that she was most lucid, she was so incredibly honest with me. And she told me why, she told me about her insecurities and why she didn't understand this need for competition with me and that she didn't want to die, and that was the hardest part. And so I kept visiting and kept hoping that she would be better, but it didn't work out that way. And she passed away later that month, and she was only 28 years old. And the year after that, I really struggled. I ended relationships because being attached to someone didn't make sense. I didn't feel like I deserved happiness. And I struggled with my own health issues. I wasn't taking care of myself. And I abruptly ended a relationship and was needed to move out of the apartment. And while I was doing so, I called on the assistance of my half-sister, Robin. Now, Robin is new to the story. Robin is 21 years older than me, and she moved to Fort Wayne after she had gone through a divorce. And I didn't see much of Robin growing up. She wasn't super close with my father growing up. And she and her family, I thought, were living this totally glamorous life because they moved something like 25 times in 20 years because her husband had a tech job and it would just require them to go from place to place to place. And her job was to homeschool their kids and pick them up and go every 9 months or so. But her kids were grown and she and her husband decided to divorce. And after all of those moves, she didn't really have any roots. So she decided she wanted to become closer with my dad and just stay in Fort Wayne for a while and be close to some family. And she and I weren't close after Erica died, but I did call her when it was time for me to move out of my boyfriend's house. And that's because she was really good at moving since she had done it in 25 times in 20 years. And as I was moving, it was really hard to pack up 4 years of my life with someone I still loved, but I just felt like I was unraveling. And if any of you have ever been around Robin, she's such a stabilizing force, and she swiftly got me out of there and just made it as painless as it could possibly be. And about a week later, I called her up because I had some free time now, and I said, hey, can I take you out to dinner since you helped me move all of my stuff? And she was excited because she herself was a little bit lonely around that point because as an adult in a new place, it's sometimes hard to make new friends. So we met up at a restaurant, and when the host asked us if we wanted to sit at the bar, she was acting kind of nervous and confused. And we sat at the bar, and I asked her, well, what's up? Why are you acting so weird? And she said, I've never sat at a bar before. And she was 46 years old. And at that point, I kind of felt like a little bit of a badass because, you know, I was introducing my sister to a bar. I was telling her about all these cool drinks that she could get. And it was just very disarming. And up to that point, I had never really had close female relationships because the primary example I had in my life was my sister Erica. And I forgot to mention that Erica was ultimately diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, which back then it was, I don't want to say it was newer, but it wasn't talked about as often. And it's a personality disorder that basically makes it impossible to have any kind of stable relationship with someone. You may absolutely love someone one minute, the next minute, if they look at you the wrong way, if they say the wrong thing, dead to you. And they also have a really altered perception of who they are. And that's just a very general description of it, but it fit her perfectly. And being when she's your primary example of what a female relationship is, it just kind of affected how I viewed the world. And I didn't even have a best friend until I was 26 years old because of that. But talking with Robin, she opened up with me about what her life was really like. Yes, she got to move around a lot, but it was also by design of her husband because he kept them in a state of upheaval so that they wouldn't have any roots, so that he could keep control of them, and he would put them down constantly. And I'm so proud of her for getting out of such a horrible relationship. And then I opened up with her too about my childhood and about the complicated feelings I had after Erica had passed away. Because after she died and seeing my mom come out of her hospice room was the absolute worst moment of my life. But in a lot of ways, it kind of felt like a spell had been broken. Because I felt like my entire life I was just bracing myself for the inevitable, for someone so self-destructive to eventually succumb. And after she died, it was kind of like the feeling you get when you're waiting for a storm to pass and the tornado siren finally stops going off. And I still have a lot of questions about why she had to live the way she did, why she had to pass away the way she did, why my parents had to suffer, why I had to suffer. But I still can't help but acknowledge the relief after it all ended. And when I was telling Robin the story, I was taken back to my second grade teacher who told me I would eventually outgrow it and we'd be best friends. And Robin said the thing that I wanted my teacher to say, and that was, that's a really fucked up thing that you went through, and that my feelings were legitimate. I think that's what I wanted to hear my entire life. And so Robin and I have grown closer and closer over the years, and because of me basically learning how to have a relationship with a woman, I learned how to reach out to other women. And I'm so happy now that I have an amazing tribe of other women and we all lift each other up. And that's just something I had no experience with before. And I still have a lot of questions about Erica's life and why things had to end the way they did. But if there's one good thing to be gained from all of that, it's the wonderful women who are in my life today. And thank you.